just a tax dodge. And they put it together, you know, well, if we take all these Catholic schools who will never collapse, and we can have a much lower tax rate than EDCO, you know, and the Coconut Valley, they will just be much cheaper to go to. And I know they had that original brochure stated that they were going to build a school at Epworth to handle 240. They expected a maximum enrollment of 180, and they would build the school for 240, which, I always remember the line, it would handle any foreseeable growth.
Oh my God.
And, we kind of outgrew it. Who would know these dang Catholics would
collapse?
Because, well, geez, you had a Catholic school at Holy Cross and Bankston and Farley,
Worthington,
New Vienna, because that was before Beckman. And then Cascade, they had two.
Exactly.
Because you couldn't have the Irish Catholics mingle with the German Catholics.
Yes. Well, could we go back a little bit farther?
Okay.
As far as you're concerned, Herman. Go back. You went to New Vienna.
Yeah, I went to New Vienna, St. Boniface.
And then you sort of, from there, what? You went to?
I went to Loras College for 2 years. And then, Dad promised, said he would finance me 2 years of college.
Okay.
And, I didn't have any money to go on to Loras after that, so I transferred to, not that I'm old, but it was Iowa State Teachers College.
Right.
And then I graduated from State College of Iowa.
You were in the transition.
I was a transition person. Actually, very few people realize that there was a State College of Iowa.
Yeah.
And in my junior year, Western Dubuque was being formed. And so after that year, I got talking with my Uncle Laverne Dietmeyer. And he said, we don't have any openings in NOAA, but they needed a driver ed instructor. And if I could just get my degree to teach driver's ed, they would have a job. So basically, I had a job at the end of my junior year in college.
Okay.
And all I had to do was finish college and started out. Then I started at midterm at Western Dubuque.
That was 62.
So three then, actually. Right. 62, 63 year, but it was in January of 63 that I started then at West Dubuque.
So, and what kind of a car did you have to drive?
actually, we had a 62 Chevy. Pretty nice car. It was different. I taught out in the old, already by that time we had outgrown the building, and we were out in the janitorial shack out in the back there. So you had the vice grips and everything else on the workbenches, but. That was an interesting start, because at that time I had gotten married on Saturday and started teaching on Monday.
Okay.
Just, you know, a routine transition.
Okay.
But it was great. Enjoyed it. Then they got really generous. And they even started to pay the coaches the second year. Up until then, that was a non-paying affair because the teachers were given this huge salary. They know my first salary was $4,400.
Yes, mine was $38.
I was going to say, you're a little older. But, we survived. We lived in this little shanty out by Dyersville, Jack Link's cottage. And if I was at all smart, and if I had any money, I should have bought that because you're looking right at the golf course, not the country club, but at
Links
out there. You're right along number two fairway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that little, there used to be a little shanty up on the hill up there.
Okay.
Oh, that would have been such a great place for a house.
Yeah.
And now it's all gone to hell. the buildings are falling down, and we used to listen to the rats race in the attic, and oh, that was scary, Bob. We went duck hunting one weekend and came back, and I had picked up hickory nuts, and I had laid them out on the kitchen floor to dry because we're all going to be gone. And I get back, and over half of them are gone. And then you start to realize that, gosh, in between the cushions on the couch is just stuffed full of hickory nuts. And then the scary one was in the Kleenex box in your bed was stuffed full of them.
Oh, my God.
It was a, that was when we decided we had to leave. And then the final coup de grace was you had this dead smell. Something died in the wall. And I couldn't stand it anymore. I'm tearing off paneling to find it. And here is this humongous rat sitting there, dead. Oh, and he's got toothpaste caps, hickory nuts all over.
But the good life? Living the good life.
He was living the good life, right. Oh, but that made us move, and that's when we bought that first house in Epworth.
Okay. I had heard that story before about the...
Oh, God. Talk about an ugly... I'm kind of a gutsy guy, but that took a player to lift him by the tail and out of there. But, yeah.
Well, so anyway, you started in 63.
Yeah.
Who were some of your colleagues that you...
Were with?
Worked with.
Well, Phil Schmitz was there already. And Don Shields, Helen Williams. I don't know if you knew Helen.
I did, yeah.
And Cy Ocean, he was the egg man.
Okay.
And
Well, Kilberg, was he there?
No, Kilberg came the next year.
Okay.
He saved my ass. Because they wanted to start wrestling, and they didn't have a wrestling coach, and I was the only one that knew wrestling was on a mat. That was about it. And so they contacted me whether I would start wrestling the next year. And, you know, when you're young and dumb, you'd do anything. And,
right.
And I had said, yeah. And then they found Kilberg. He'd been down at Bennett, Iowa. I think it's Bennett.
I think that's right.
And so he became available, and he came on up. So Keller's a rookie yet compared to me.
Okay.
Well, so what year did you start teaching then?
Well, I started at 61, 62.
Would that have been down at Bellevue?
No.
No?
Actually, when I was a senior at Loras, I realized I needed some kind of employment after graduation.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, as a junior, I took some education courses and majored in history. And anyway, getting on toward the end of the year, and senior year, and one spring day I got a call from the placement office to come over. And so I did, and this priest was there, and his name was... Father Yaroslav Skluzacek, and he was a pastor at Protovin.
I was going to say, you're going to go up northeast, aren't you?
In Iowa, and he was looking for a teacher coach because the assistant pastor had been the coach, but he moved on. And so consequently, I went up with my folks and looked at the job and the town, and school wasn't much, but I decided to, I would do
job.
It.
Job. It was job.
And so I became the first lay teacher that they ever associated with.
Yeah.
At that time.
So how long did you stay there then?
2 years.
2 years. Then you went to Bellevue?
Right.
Okay.
Two of the best years. I was treated like royalty.
I'm proud of it.
Oh, yeah.
What was the official name of the school?
It was called Rudolf Feenum. Because of the name of the pastor, Father Rudolf something or other, who built the school in the late 20s.
Uh-huh.
at any rate, there was a little town hall across the street from the school where it was sort of a gym.
Well, yeah, it had a floor.
But it wasn't big enough for home games. And we actually played our home games in Spillville because they had built a facility with a nice, fairly nice gym at that time for their school. And so I still, back in those days, when you went to an away game, you didn't know what we were going to be faced with as far as the gym was concerned.
Right.
And so that was always interesting. And I started to play fast-pitch softball with the team, and I got to know a lot of guys. And so signed on for the next year for a $100 raise, of course. And room and board was $5 a week with this couple. And so I don't know why I ever left. But
now, when did that school close?
They closed in, I think, 67, 68.
I knew it had to be in there somewhere.
It didn't last a whole lot longer than that.
Yeah.
I think there was about 100 students when I was there.
So where did they go then for parochial education?
For parochial at the time, they would have gone to Cresco Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That would have been the big school.
Yeah, but I don't know how much longer. I don't remember how much longer Notre Dame lasted.
Yeah, not very much.
That's where Squires came from.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I always thought he was all white.
No. But at any rate,
his wife came from Allwine, didn't she?
That's quite possible, yeah.
She was Jones.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, getting back to you.
Oh.
Okay. What are your memories or anecdotal memories of things that happened maybe during your early years at the high school?
We had an awful lot of fun. And we used to play that faculty varsity game every year.
Okay.
That was a highlight of the faculty. The varsity always figured they're just going to come out and stomp these old men. And we weren't bad. We had Wick and Kilberg and... Mr. Buckman played yet.
Okay.
And Al Eade. Never forget the one year. Well, we never did lose to him. Denny Harrison, those guys, they thought sure they were just going to kill us. And we beat them by running, if you can imagine that.
Really?
They just weren't used to people grabbing a rebound, bing, bang, gone. And mind you, when we ran, that meant one ran and the rest of us watched.
Okay.
Yeah, the one year we got ahead and we're into the last 35, 40 seconds. And we had a timeout and we're ahead and by like 3 points or something like that. And then we said, now, okay, nothing but a layup. Now just move the ball, nothing but a layup. So you get out there, pass, and Wick's out there about 25 feet out, puts her up, but made it. So now he's a hero, of course, and we're like, God, Wick, it said layups. He said, but there was nobody guarding me. That's a layup.
God.
Yeah, the long, tall one. Yeah, we had... those were some growing years. But that year with Denny Harris and Louis Kelb and Dave Whiter.
Sharky
Gassman. He was the real glue of it all.
Yeah.
Damn, he was a good athlete.
Tucker?
Well, Tucker is another one. He was a transfer in.
Yeah.
Good athlete. And really played hard for us. But he came with that reputation out of Cascade, you know. And
sure.
I'll never forget the night we're down at Cascade and Popeye Hush is reffing. And I mean, they are just killing Roger Tucker. They are just hammer, crunch, push, and nothing. And at halftime, I said, Jim, they're really kind of moving Tucker around an awful lot out there. And Popeye looks at you and says, if that fucker thinks I'm going to call a foul in his favor, he's got another thing coming. Jim had such a nice way with the words.
Well, that just reinforces the year that we went up to Guttenberg and played up there.
Okay.
And that was that old gym up there.
Yeah, right.
And Popeye was officiating. Bill Hafer was, I think, a junior.
Oh, okay. We're at Farley now. All right.
And we're playing the game. And anyway, there was some kind of collision or something, and Popeye didn't call anything. And I think it involved Bill, and he said something to Popeye, and he didn't tee him up, or he just, you know, ignored him. So maybe, I don't know how much later it was in the game, but I happened to be watching. We pushed the ball up the floor real fast, and Bill had outletted, I think, and he was still coming up the floor on the far side. And as he goes by Popeye gives him the elbow and pushes him into the bleachers.
Yeah, he was as steady as a... But overall, we were blessed with awfully good officials around here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. So then, shortly after the school had been completed, all of a sudden you get this influx of kids, and the board has to, and Wayne have to start bringing in these stupid portables.
Portables were nice. They were air conditioned.
Right.
In the winter, they were really air conditioned. I always contested, you know, I like being out in my portable out there.
I think a lot of people felt the same way.
You knew in a bad day, the administration was never coming out. they were just nice. Of course, I was there for the coon killing caper.
Oh, sure.
Damn. Blam, 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 blam. Because that was right outside my door there, right next to Al Eads' room.
So you didn't get any ricochets into you?
No, they were all ricocheted into Al's portable.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was...
That could have been a real disaster.
Imagine if that happened today. I mean, that would be on national news.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
I don't know how many shots that guy fired off at that coon. And he was no more than 20 feet away from it.
Oh.
I enjoyed the kids, though. They had the right attitude. They carried the dead coon off finally after they hit it. And the next period, you come out there and they had taken the chalk and made a chalk figure down on the blacktop where the dead coon was. I enjoyed it anyhow.
Well, yeah, so anyway, when did track start? Was that
right? Well, that was in the second year already. They decided, you know, all we really had at that time was basketball and baseball. I had baseball two seasons because you had spring and fall.
Right.
No summer, just spring and fall. But then they decided maybe we ought to have track. So, and again, the only guy on the staff that, you know, knew the track, you ran forward and turned left. I was it. So I got to be the track coach. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. And we're up on the hill, right where the track is now. It was grass.
Was that leveled, or, I mean?
Oh, it was level. Okay. Yeah, they had planned on putting a football field up there.
Yeah.
Now, why, I have no idea yet why they built that hill. Because originally the landscape came down and they built all that up with dirt that they moved from the bottom.
That was fill.
It was fill. You know, we put in the first football goalposts, you got down around 10 feet and you're right into black dirt.
Okay.
When you're digging it out of there. But yeah, that hill was built. And then, I had my little guides as to how to lay out a track. And so we had laid it out and doing it all with a string and a tape measure. And we're pretty accurate because when they put in the track, then they had paid $7,000, I think it was, for an engineer to lay out the track, and he didn't vary more than maybe 6 inches off of my course anywhere.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So we're pretty cool on that. So they paid me back for that then.
Okay.
All the grass around this house all came from the track. We rented a sod cutter and chugging around there, and a couple of hay wagons and pickups and a couple of cases of beer. And it's amazing how much sod you can lay. A quarter mile track is a lot of sod.
It's a lot of sod.
Oh, crap. And it's heavy.
That's a killer. I participated in the sodding of the baseball infield later on. I'm telling you, I mean, you can vary the depth of that sod cutter
right.
Too much, and all of a sudden, wow, that was a killer.
Oh, yeah.
But
no, I was proud of the fact that I had hit it right on the mark.
Yeah.
And it was in the proper location, because there really, as you can tell when you're up there now, there isn't any room for error where you can shift it north-south. There just isn't any room, and we'd fit her in there. But then I had always wanted them to dig out the northwest corner and make it like a rock bowl.
Okay.
And have the track down there. And,
oh, that'd been a great idea.
Well, and the Seabees, the Navy Seabees, they were wanting dirt to move anyhow, and so they had volunteered that they would move all the dirt and put it in, and you could get by with just little stubby light poles up on top of the hill then, and then a full-size pole on the other side, and you could build your stadium seats right into the hillside. Buck didn't want that.
That was a mistake.
Yeah. Well, he kept contending that when the school was built, it was designed with this football field in the back on top of the hill. And you didn't want to vary from that.
That was... So we have the Stadium of Perpetual Breeze.
Yes, that's what I've always named it anyway. And it is breezy up there.
All of the years of walking up there in the spring for the home meets, and you just had to have a hooded something or other because brutal. It was...
Well, and on the flagpole was always the chattering, the chain.
Yeah.
Clang, 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 clang.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a struggle for you, for a lot of us, because we didn't get a lot of support athletically from the board, and so many examples of that. But the topper for me was the football field, and the when they made that football field, was not crowned.
Oh no,
at all. And as you recall, at the northeast corner,
was there's a little bit of a water hole. Yeah.
And so, and the poor Tom, every summer he'd be dragging those friggin' hoses around. And at any rate, I forget what year it was, but he and I decided that we were going to crown the field after the season. So it came, and I talked to, of course, our Mr. Barr at that time, and I think he told me that we could have 5 loads of dirt. And so I got Jerry Onstetter brought in 5 loads of dirt, and that was like pretty much like pissing in the ocean.
Yeah, right. That was like taking a salt shaker.
But it's fortunate at that time it happened that Mr. Barr was away at some kind of whatever conference, and I told Jerry just keep bringing it. And so I forget how many loads it was, 25 maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
But fortunately, it got all crowned and seeded, and the weather was perfect for the start of that seed going,
right,
starting to germinate. Shit, by next fall, we had a great grass and a crown field and whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, we did a lot of our own little projects.
Oh my!
One I always remember is when we started track. You high jumped into sawdust.
Okay, yeah.
And so we had just gotten bales and put like, I'd say 3 layers of bales, and then the sawdust fill it up level so that when you landed, you really were just over the bar and pumped her into the sawdust. A lot of them left the sawdust level down on the regular ground level.
Right.
And oh, that was painful.
Right.
So we were kind of a luxury one. And then we decided, gee, this foam is coming in, you know, this is going to be the way to go. And, you know, well, they didn't want to buy foam. Myself and a bunch of the track guys were out, and we're over to North End Wrecking and asked them if they had any foam from the car seats. Yeah, if you take it out, you can have it. So we are there, we filled our 1, 2, 3, I think it was 5 of those big pillows, you might call them.
Kind of netted stuff?
Yeah, we filled them with the foam then. And, oh man, we were pioneers, because you could go up in there and vault, and you could let go of the pole and land on your back. And it was
comfortable.
Oh yeah. But that was a lot of work, you know, getting that foam. And then we discovered Dubuque Mattress Company has all kinds of ends and stuff. And it was nice and clean, and you didn't have to take it out of the seats.
Yes.
So we replaced it with that. I always remember one year we went over to Maquoketa Valley for their track meet. And they had asked us if we could bring our foam along with us. So here we are in our bus, you know, and I don't think it would have been real approved safety-wise, but the aisles and above the seats and everything was foam. And you pushed it out the back door, because we were the luxury school.
They had foam and everything.
Which brings up one more story I just got to tell. At first, we had a hard time getting the kids to identify with West Dubuque. You know, they were a Farley kid that went to West Dubuque, or a New Vienna kid. And the one year we're up at Manchester, and I got a Hall kid, and he was a pole vaulter. So when they're signing in for the meet, the guy that's clerking the event, he says, "Hall, where are you from?" "Graff." he didn't identify West Dubuque. He was from Graff.
Too funny.
I was figuring that was a typical tip-off, you know, that they weren't real located or identified with our West Dubuque system. That took a while get them to get used to that.
Yeah, that was certainly a thing that it took a long time to amalgamate the...
Yeah, to get all these communities to come together the way we have it now, man, is it nice. You know, Piasta, Daresville, Holy Cross, that's just a mix now.
Right, yeah.
But, boy, back then, he's a West Dubuque kid from New Vienna, which was kind of rare to begin with. He was an outcast if he did that.
Or,
like their gym wasn't good enough.
And you might have got a few from Sand Springs.
Oh, yeah, like Bender.
Yeah.
I know for one would have been out of Sand Springs.
Wick and I have been kind of working this project a little bit. We did two interviews with Wayne. Mm-hmm. Really good interviews, and he's really sharp. And but at any rate, we did Ray Sherman a couple weeks ago. Raymond's, you know, he's kind of in and out, and has a hard time recalling. But Pearl still has a really good memory. But at any rate, before we went to see Ray, I said, let's stop and have breakfast at Piasta. And I told him about the night before. So anyway, I called Tom Stecker, because Tom lives right over the hill. And he met with Wick and I for breakfast a couple weeks ago. And anyway, Tom was telling about when he got to the point of having be an incoming freshman at West Dubuque. It seemed like everything was okay with their pastor, Father Breitbach, up to a point, but apparently something happened, whether he got the word from the Archbishop or whatever, that wasn't a good idea to send kids to West Dubuque. And so but Tom went anyway with some other kids, and he said that when that happened, Father Breitbach refused to give them CCD instruction, and they had to go to Dubuque to get their catechetical instructions.
Yeah, God. Yeah, stick with something else. I really enjoyed that, man.
Oh, my. Yeah. Yeah.
I did sharpen my elbows up on him maybe a little bit when we were scrimmaging back when the coaches still could work out against the kids. And
yeah.
We taught him the fine art of rebounding.
Stick was recalling some of the Edwards construction games.
Oh, yeah.
But he's got a small acreage in Centralia.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he has some cattle that I could get some from Jack Smith.
Over at Bankston.
Yeah. And feeds them out to a point, I guess, and whatever. He said he's going to have me come over and see his operation sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Hard to picture Sticker as a farm boy.
Yeah. Well, that's his hobby farm, I guess, is what he calls it, basically.
Yeah.
But, any other things that strike your fancy as far as memories of working with other colleagues and
I don't know if anybody threw out the old cabaret show that Phil used to put on.
No, nobody's touched on that.
Ooh. Well, we'd be kicked out of school if we did it now. But he would put on this variety show, and just local talent, And of course, most of those just scared to death of the public. So to build up their courage, they would bring maybe some imbibation along into the locker room. And I know the last night when we wrapped up, I got volunteered somehow to tidy up the locker room. And the empty bottles just fit in the trunk of my car. Oh, and we're not talking beer bottles.
We're talking whiskey bottles.
Yeah, whiskey and wine. And then what was left, we transported up to the old fire station because we had a continuation of the party up there then.
Okay.
But, yeah, that was Bill Kilberg and I, and coffee. We put on this skit anyway, where you got your lines and you're reading them as you go. And so Keller would get up there, and then the curtains closed. And he was one of the curtains. He had a little valance on top of the head. It was just crazy, but it was fun. And the one year...
So they had good crowds for...
Oh, God, yeah. It was like full house.
Wow.
The one year, Kim Carl Hying and I, we put on one. It was, it must have been in 76 then, on the Centennial. And we were making a centennial cake. And we had these eggs, you know, you had to mix into the cake. And we're throwing them back and forth. And of course, everybody assumes they were just old boiled eggs, you know. And so then as the last one, Carl throws and he misses badly. And it lands out on the gym floor by the crowd and splash. Then they were impressed.
That was impressive. Wow.
Yeah, well, that was quite a show we put on.
So, what did you do that for about 10 years or so, you think?
Yeah, maybe not quite that long, but as long as we legally could, I guess.
Without getting in trouble.
Without getting in trouble is right.
Yeah.
No, that was quite a show that Phil put on and got away with.
Yeah, Tom and I just did interviewed Phil in August, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
So still having a tough time with Ann's passing.
Yeah.
And but otherwise, he seemed, you know, okay, and he had some good memories of things. And because actually, that was the first thing that brought the school some identity was the band.
Oh, know? Yeah.
And that was an amazing run, and with that, and actually, we're getting up a petition. I should have brought one along to name the new facility after Phil.
I heard that, and I think that's just such a logical sequence.
Got to be a slam dunk.
Yeah,
but we need 200 adult signatures and 100 students, so.
So how many times you signed it?
At least a few.
No, I certainly will sign that, and so will Sean.
I got to bring one to town here because I know we can get a number of them here for sure. So,
no, that would be a natural.
Yeah.
I know the first year I started teaching, I thought it was pretty novel that these kids are blowing horns and stuff. And then making it sound awfully good when they got together, you know, for a presentation.
Well, back then they had just the one small band room.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And
the hall.
And the hallway. In the boiler room.
In the boiler room. No, it was different then, wasn't it?
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah.
And I remember the year when we got the addition on the west there with the bigger band room,
right?
Wrestling room and classrooms. Because I always remember that. My memory of that is that Joe Ertl was on the board, and he wanted this built as cheaply as possible.
Well, yeah.
Consequently,
how much canvas was it going to take?
the walls and the floor was, you know, really not good stuff. But at any rate, it served its purpose over the years.
Yeah, Joe just never did graduate beyond the concept of it being a tax dodge.
He just never bought into it.
Never bought into it being an educational center.
Yeah.
But
Wayne talked about, you know, his job was to get this organized to the point of coming to a vote, and he had to go out to all of the one-room schoolhouse areas. He said basically that's all he did that one year was go out to meet with these people to get their support. And of course, again, it was for the tax situation.
I never did see an exact figure as to what the millage rate was at Edco versus West Dubuque. I really wish I'd have seen one of those.
Yeah, I have done some research as far as going through the commercial and the Pioneer about that period of time. I have the voting totals as far as that's concerned, but I don't think I ever saw anything about the comparative millage rates. I don't know.
Because that was their strong selling point.
But
that had to be a project when they were putting that together. I know our farm, the back fence is the border.
Okay.
We were the end of West Dubuque, and I often wonder, you know, how much our Kelly's paying over there at Edco compared to us.
So you were northwest of Petersburg?
Yeah, northwest of Petersburg, towards Colesburg, up that way. Now, of course, if you look at our boundary, it's a jigsaw puzzle.
So that was interesting as far as the vote was concerned, because it was amazing somewhat, but one of the closest when they voted to actually organize as a district, one of the lowest percentages of support was from Farley.
You're kidding.
And I asked Ray Sherman and Pearl about that, and they said that there was a big concern, basically, because St. Joe's High School was there. The Archdiocese just didn't want another school in Farley. And so Pastor gave it a lot of opposition. And it came down to the vote on the board one evening about where the school is going to be located. And Ray said that he wanted it to be in Farley, of course. But they eventually, Herb Raker was on the board with her. And they eventually made a motion to put it in Epworth. The vote was 3-2 in favor. And at that point, they decided to revote and made it unanimous 5-0.
And
that's how close it was to. Because apparently the thought of locating the high school was to put it at the center of the district. And the center was Farley, and there was discussion about that area right south of the highway where the tower is.
Yeah, that's
that area right there would be the position. But so that's how it happened.
Yeah, I know. I remember Laverne talking about it. He says, you know, you think you got to go all the way over to Epworth, and said if you look at the odometer on your car, it's 3 miles. It's not very far.
Right. Now, Laverne passed away in 09. He did pass away suddenly, or?
No, it was, you knew it was coming.
Okay. I mean, see, that what happened, we talked to Bob McCabe one day up in the bank,
mm-hmm.
and he said that Laverne had kept a diary.
And a journal.
And a journal. And so we tracked that down, and Gloria had it. And so Wick got the copy of it, and I've got it right now. But I'm so amazed at what that man kept.
Yeah.
I mean, he kept every year all their financial expenses and profits. And
yeah. For an eighth grade education, he was a rather brilliant man.
Oh, I'm telling you. Totally. I mean, I was I was just engrossed in reading.
Yeah.
As the years went by, what he did and things that happened, and the kids came along, of course. And the thing that was, what to me was kind of funny was it got to be in the '60s, '70s, '80s, and he needed more land and farm, and so farms became available. But he couldn't pull the trigger. I think it got over $1,000 an acre, he just couldn't relate to that.
Yeah.
And he admitted later on that he says, "I made a mistake. I should have bought that when I could have." And,
yeah.
But he did buy more farms, obviously. And
yeah.
Whatever. So.
Yeah, I think he worked on the Jerry Cuff theory of finances that. If you run enough money through your hands, you're going to hang on to something.
Okay. And I didn't realize that he managed the mill.
Oh, yeah, he'd done that for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Yeah, when John died, then he took over, basically.
Okay. So that was mid-70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Whitty was an interesting character, too.
I didn't know him.
He was the ultimate businessman type. And his dad was that way, too, up in Petersburg years ago.
Okay.
I don't know if you've been in Petersburg lately.
Not lately, no.
Wow, talk about a town that has gone down.
Is that right?
Yeah, you got to look down in the pit to see it now.
Yeah, you know, and I keep thinking how fortunate Farley is to have the school.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like that Farley never had any, whatever we call it, leadership to get things done.
Yeah.
And it just kind of stagnated. But,
yeah, I even kind of marvel that Farley got that biodiesel plant.
Yeah. Yep.
So now the town boom, of course, is Piazza, but not industry that much. Just,
well, take a look at that west end.
That's true.
There's a number of firms out there, and of course, AJ's keeps building his empire.
Wow.
I mean,
now AJ did not graduate from West Dubuque, did he?
You know, it seems to me that is true. I don't recall why he didn't or what happened or.
Yeah, I don't think he graduated from anywhere.
No, I'm sure he did.
But what an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and what a benefactor for Piazza and West Dubuque.
Yeah.
The area.
I know, when they put in the new track, the all-weather one. I thought they ought to go over to AJ and see if he really wouldn't like that mighty emblem painted on that track right in front of it. And, but they never did get that done.
Well, yeah, you know, and when you look at the basketball rosters, probably 85% of our kids are from Piazza because of that rec center.
Oh yeah.
And I talked to Gary a couple weeks ago, and he said
I asked, you know, how it looks for the season. And he said, pretty good. But he said, I'll tell you what, he said, that Colt kid, a freshman, is going to be better than his brother, he said.
Lake, you mean?
Or Lake, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. That little Lake is just phenomenally dedicated to basketball.
He said he shot 40,000 jump shots last summer.
Geez, I've never been able to jump 40,000 times.
Wow. Yeah, at any rate.
No, they could just find one more or two of those 6'7", 6'8", guys.
Yeah, that's all they're lacking.
I mean, Baumhofer is going to have to hold down the floor.
Yeah.
As best he can.
Is that Johnson kid going to play, or?
More than likely.
I mean, he can...
He's a trip to go around, at
yeah,
least.
Yeah. Give us a little strength inside.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to be an interesting bunch, I think.
I think so. Otting still growing, I think.
They said he grew a bunch this summer.
And Haldeman.
Yeah, he's bigger than he was.
I saw a picture of him and his dad, and they're...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, I wonder if T.J. Lake is going to play much up at Mankato this year.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder. It's the only
time. He looks a little bigger and wider if you look on the internet on the team picture.
Yeah.
And he's got the full facial hair now.
Okay, so...
He's maturing.
He's getting there.
And Otting is doing a nice job out at...
Briarcliff.
I wanted to say Augustana. I knew that was wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I'm good friends with Brendan McCoy's
friend. Oh, yeah.
We golf together all the time. Anyway, he's playing at Ripon.
Oh, is that where he's at?
Yeah. And he's playing.
Good man. I always enjoyed him. He was my real McCoy.
He was the real deal. And John, did you know John at all?
No.
He's a senior at Creighton, but he was student body president out there.
Mm.
I just thought he would be a politician, and I think that's where he'll wind up maybe possibly doing.
I have trouble enough following my grandkids.
Yeah, me too. I got my only grandson, Jill's son, is a hockey player.
And where's he playing at?
Well, he's like 9.
Oh, okay.
He's in the development stage, but he's a very good hockey player.
Geez, yeah, if I could stand up on skates, I was doing good.
But you talk about that, that's an expensive sport.
Yeah, I got a grandson down at, down by St. Louis down there. Excuse me. But he's an avid hockey guy, too. And he's got all the equipment, but he doesn't play for anybody.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Well, the only problem with hockey is you go to the practices and the games and you freeze your ass off.
Yeah.
So you have to be prepared. So.
Yeah, I noticed one year when I was up at Duluth that they still had outdoor hockey rinks up there for recreational purposes.
Wow. Susie and I, we took about a 10-day trip early October. We went through Indiana, Ohio. And I always wanted to see, well, you know, the movie Hoosiers?
Yeah.
I always wanted to see that gym. I knew the town where it was at. So we wound up going to this town. It's called Knightstown.
Mm-hmm.
Straight east of Indianapolis. We got there in mid-afternoon. And it's a tourist attraction. I mean, it's big time. There's a guy there that...
Kind of like the Field of Dreams, huh?
Sort of, yes, very much so. And so we went in there, took some pictures, and there were other people. They rented out for conferences, but the big attraction is every summer they get all the best players in Indiana and have all-star games at this gym.
Ooh, that's some serious talent now.
Yeah, you're talking big-time stuff, so. But, yeah, that was a lot of fun to see that. And, but the end of our trip, we wound up in Elmhurst, where Jill lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because she ran the Chicago Marathon this year.
Okay.
And so that Sunday, we went down. She told us where to go. So we drove down, and we stood along the side of the street while all these people went by. I mean...
I know. Yeah, Brittany Urmson ran in there, too.
Jill also ran the Detroit Marathon a couple of years ago, and we went up to that one.
I have no idea what prompts a person to run a marathon.
I know what it takes to train, because she's done it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, jeez.
But I still question why.
The sanity of the whole thing.
Yeah. Doing, doing, doing.
Yeah. But she and another friend opened up a fitness studio 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, it's just been taking off like crazy.
Oh, great.
Elmhurst is a upscale.
It's an upscale town, right? Town.
Therefore, there's all these yuppie women who want to be skinny.
Yeah.
I mean, her clientele is they can't.
94 pounds.
They need more space because they want to keep on coming, so. Wow. Yep, so. Anyhow, well, anything else?
Oh, gosh, yeah, I don't know what to do. Got to get back to that once in a while.
Talk about the period of time when collective bargaining came into actuality.
Yeah, we actually got to bargain with the board. And
right.
Louis Himes was representing the board at that time, always.
Mid-70s?
Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, you pretty much are locked in. You know what the money is. And now you got to talk them whether they want it for school buses or faculty or where do they want to spend it. But you knew how much money there was. And Louis had a tendency, you know, I got the feeling he worked by the hour. And the 1 year he got off on this kick that they should not have to pay men and women the same benefits for medical purposes because men can't get pregnant. And he would throw that out. If it got to be a slow night, Louis would come up with the men getting pregnant bit. And one night I couldn't resist it. I said, Louis, if the men can't get pregnant, why do you keep fucking them? But, yeah, that was an interesting go at it. Then the 1 year when I was president, we did it in a one-night affair. Okay. Well, it was one day and one night because Carl and I and Wegman got together and we went fishing. And when we're fishing, having a good time, but Dave throws out, you know, and negotiations coming up. Why don't you guys come in, you know, at X number of dollars? And I agreed. I said, I really don't understand the logic of starting out where we send you to Washington, D.C., and we go to San Francisco, and then we're going to meet in Dubuque eventually. But anyway, he said, if you start there, could you counter, or they would counter then with blah blah, and then if that happened, if we would counter that again, and yeah, then we had to figure that, okay. And I mean, we're talking exactly was what we as a group had agreed to, that this is what we want to get.
Yeah.
And they tossed in dental insurance, which we didn't even
anticipate.
And so it starts out, damn, exactly the way he wanted it. And so we countered with what he wanted, and they came back with what we wanted, and blah, blah, blah. And so now we're, you know, you can't just agree at the table. You got to go to your little private session.
Safe face.
And we're in the side room now, and it's like, hey, guys, this is exactly what we wanted, plus dental insurance. It's more than what we had anticipated when we started bargaining. I think we got to take it. But Lois was on our group. You can't take it the first night. If they can offer that, they can offer more. Finally, we broke her down to where we said that I think this is it. And so we had agreed, and she was actually in tears then. And maybe she was right. Maybe they did have more to offer, but I was proud of the fact that we had done it in one night. And
so was that in the earlier years when that happened?
Or? No, that was
later on.
That was later on. Because that was one of the, yeah, that was later on. I'm terrible on chronology, Bob.
Well, yeah, you kind of have a sense, though, that it was later on in the process.
It wasn't one of our early goes at this. Now, when we wrote the first master contract, that was interesting.
Yeah.
God, where you had to get the right whereases, and boy, it's a lot of legal jargonese that I'm not up on.
Well, I mean, that was basically starting from scratch.
It was. It was a blank piece of paper and write a contract.
That was the end of Buck.
Yeah, that was the end of Buck. He did not like that. Bless his soul.
Yeah.
And yet you get together when things aren't exactly right. It's amazing how many people say, boy, we could use a week or two of Buck.
Yeah.
Ralph, he was a disciplinarian.
Yep.
And when he was told that the teachers could say something, he didn't like that. God, those last years when he had his stroke and he couldn't talk anymore. And I would go down and visit him down there in the Ozarks, and he couldn't speak anymore.
Yeah.
But he could still work the old left hand. And you had to fill in the blanks. And having known him as long as I did, I pretty much knew what he wanted to say. And so you would say it for him. And he was just happy as hell with that.
Sure.
That he was communicating again. But what a man.
Yeah. Yep.
One night he kind of shattered a guy's, a student's window in his car.
Oh, no.
It was out in the front there, and this one had gotten escorted out from a dance. And so now, of course, he can't just go home. He's got to come around the front of the school and then burn rubber going by. And then he would go around and come out again and do the same thing, and now Buck has had as much as he's going to have. And he walks out right in front of that guy. I mean, right in front of his car. And the guy did stop. And he didn't want to get out of the car. And he had rolled his window down, and he was talking to Buck through the opened window. But then Buck had opened the door for him and wanted him to get out and get in the school. And the guy started driving away, and Buck may have kind of forcefully closed the door. And the whole window, it just shattered. Oh, my.
Oh, yes.
more things that we'd have been fired for years ago.
Yeah,
if we did them now.
Yes, indeed.
What was your first year at West Dubuque?
Okay. Well, I went to like I said, Bellevue for one disappointing year. I had an incredible amount of, as far as athletics, the talent down there.
Big too.
Oh, we had you name it, we had it as far as baseball and basketball. But as far as being manageable individuals, I frankly was not prepared to deal with those people.
Oh yeah, because Protovan, you said you had been babied. Yeah.
So it just didn't work out. So that spring, I think Bernie Hayek had left St. Joe's, and they were looking for a coach and teacher. So that was my next stop, thankfully. And so then I was there 64, 65. That would have been Tucker and Harris's their senior year.
Right.
And so then I stayed there through 69-70. And at that point, Father Ryder was the coordinator and informed me that I was probably making a little too much money because I got my master's. And I should look for something else. So somehow that was when Sheriff Time came in Thayersville. So I had contacted Wayne to see if there was any openings at West Dubuque. And he said, well, you want to be a principal? I said, well, I hadn't thought about it, but tell me more. So that was how I got started. I mean, talk about knowing nothing about administration, but you know, you kind of learned as you went.
Yeah.
So I spent, you know, those years in Dyersville with Warning Hall, fourth grade, Dyersville Kindergarten, and the Corton Camp Junior High Shared Time. Those were really, I mean, good years. And that was in late 70s, they then decided that there was a need for the high school shared time. So that wound up being the brothers' quarters, and I took over that. And I was also then at Farley, so I was going back and forth. And so that's where we... That was during the time you and I were doing the basketball.
Yeah, that was good times.
Oh, my God.
In our ultra-modern equipment.
Lots of miles we put on going around the tri-state area.
All the way up to Mount Horeb. I think that may have been the longest run.
Yeah, it might have been. Probably was. We went to... Where do we go in Illinois? Polo? With the way
we're yeah, we're on
the Marcos.
Marcos.
And I remember going up to
North Winnesheek.
North Winnesheek. That was where you weren't sure about the pronunciation.
Yeah, Dignan.
Dignan's Insurance Agency. That was just...
No, I thought too that it was just a misspell and it should have been Digman.
Yeah.
Wrong. I'm glad we did ask though.
Yeah. That was like the blankest expression you've ever seen.
Yes, it was. Oh, God, Bob.
Oh, then they, how about when we went to Rockton?
Oh, yeah, they had the jumper.
Yeah. And the sign on the door.
Yes. Don't enter unless this door is open. They have a tough crowd there.
Oh my God, that was...
I know, I always remember that guy that could just jump.
You know, that was... He was amazing.
Because I had made the comment, and I don't know if it was appropriate on the air, but if anybody caught it, but I said, you really worry about this kid tripping over his jock after he gets done jumping, because he would just shoot up in the air.
Yeah, that was impressive.
I have no idea what his name was.
Nope.
I didn't know where Rockton was either until...
Just north of Rockford.
Yeah.
As we found out.
Mm. Almost in Wisconsin.
Pretty much, yeah. There was, yeah, I remember the game we played, we broadcast of Miles.
He said, oh, God, the Raider girls.
The Raiders. There was two Raiders playing, and their nickname was the Raiders.
Yeah. No, the other team were the Raiders.
That's right. Whoever that was.
Because I always kept, in my mind, it would be like, Raiders passes to Raider, and oh, it's intercepted by Raiders, and it's two for the Raiders. Oh,
you know who's going where?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Mm. That was a tough night, because you always had to use their first name.
Yeah.
What was Independence St. John's had the Della Gardelle?
Yeah.
Which really has a nice roll to it.
Sort of, yeah.
But I could not say Della Gardelle.
Degler-dell.
Degler-dell. Oh.
In fact, you know, I kept some stats and score sheets and whatever, and when I was coaching St. John's, or St. Joe's, we played St. John's.
Yeah.
And Jeff Corker was playing for...
Is that right?
St. John's. Yeah.
I'll be damned.
Yep.
I always remember going up to Independence umpiring baseball one night for St. John's. And, you know, before the game, you know, you take a few pitches behind the plate. And God, this guy's coming up in my face so funny. And you're trying to get comfortable looking over the shoulder. Finally, you step back and realize it's a left-handed catcher.
That was Bill Murphy's years of coaching at St. John's. Remember Bill?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And one spring, I think we played our first baseball game at Independence. We drove over there and we get to the diamond. It's just, you know, had not been dragged. It's just winter stuff still laying around. And pretty soon Bill shows up, opens his trunk up, throws the bags out to the approximate location of the bases. And this guy shows up to umpire and away we go. I don't think he'd be able to practice.
Did they play over at the high school one then?
I don't think it was at the high school.
Okay, because the games I did were over at the high school.
Yeah, this was... I can't remember exactly, but...
But I can see him... That's good enough.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
What was Weyerberg's first name?
Hap.
Hap, thank you.
Yep. See, that was one of my good friends was Mike Mahoney, who was the sports editor at the Olin Daily Register.
Oh, okay.
And he wound up marrying Hap's daughter. And I was in the wedding, and they wound up in up around the Twin Cities. They're still up in that area.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah, those old Eastern Iowa Conference meetings were always interesting. Yep, pass, open the bar.
Went down to 528, I think, didn't we? Cascade?
Yeah, we were down there. We went up at Rickardsville.
Yeah.
But, yep, they were always basically the same thing. You're really didn't cover anything, but you had a good time.
Social, very sociable events.
Yep. Yeah, the first conference meet and track we ran was interesting too, because it was Cascade and I. Bob David Schofer ran Cascade and I ran ours, and nobody else really did track, but they decided they'd show up for this because they'd have a kid that could run pretty fast, but then found out they couldn't run real fast real long.
Was that at Epworth then, or?
Yes, we had the meet at Epworth on the grass. On our, we had that marked and everything.
Was that late 60s maybe?
I would say mid-60s.
Mid-60s.
And we didn't even run an official order of events. It was just kind of, well, what do you think, Bob? Your quarter miler is going to double up. Maybe we ought to move that event up here, and that would give him a recovery time. And
yeah,
it was interesting, but nobody complained.
Well,
Yeah, that was back in Sense and Burners. They had Judd Driscoll running for Aquin at that time.
I remember, yeah.
God, he was quick. But we had little Pat McCarthy, who was just as quick.
Okay.
They made some hell of races. But Judd would always throw up after the race. Yeah, God. Yeah, Bob McCabe was a heck of a hurdler for me years ago, too. Okay. He had no pride. He didn't mind knocking hurdles down, like all of them. Yeah, he always knew where he was on the track. Blam, 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 blam.
Okay.
But he was good at it.
Remind him next time I see him.
Then he may have nicked a hurdle or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, the next good one after him probably was Bob Harris.
I remember him.
Big redhead out of Fiesta.
Was he related to the...
No.
The different family.
This is a different family. He was a rounder from the word go, but he could run the hurdles well.
Yeah.
We're down at Cedar Rapids at Prairie one night for the Invitational, and in the prelims, he was seated second in the heat to a guy from Jefferson, and the guy from Jefferson beat him, and Bob was second, and so they're on into the finals. And then before the finals, the guy from Jefferson made a mistake. He's going down the line, and where are you from? Okay. What's your best time? Okay. He gets to Harris, and he says, I beat you in the prelim, so I don't have to worry about you. And now the steam is coming out of Bob's ears. And he was over the third hurdle before this guy from Jefferson's over the second one. And then he hung on to win it. But it was funny to watch because I had never seen Bob Harris come out of the...
Oh, blocks.
Oh, poof. He was mad. Shouldn't have said that. Now, I used to have Kim Greenwood. Now, he could get away with that in the district or in the distance events. He was always going around, what's your best time? Okay, I can beat that. And but he was a good one.
Where was he from?
He was Cascade Greenwood. That was before Cascade was public school. And they were heathens out of Cascade.
Oh, my.
Oh, geez, how times have changed. I know it used to be, when I was a kid, my parents didn't even want you to talk to a Protestant. I mean, that just wasn't kosher to do that. And if you knew an Irish Catholic, that was kind of... My one cousin married an Irish Catholic up in Wisconsin, up at Bloomington. her name was kind of Irish. It was Genevieve O'Shaughnessy.
Okay.
But I always remember Mom and Dad went to the wedding, and then they're back home.